Former Philadelphia Sheriff John Green pleads not guilty to fraud and corruption charges. I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. WHYY's Tom McDonald was in the courtroom today as the process played out.
John Green was brought in handcuffs to the magistrate at the federal courthouse, where he waived the reading of the indictment and entered his not guilty plea. Green is accused of failing to properly do the job he held for 22 years, says federal prosecutor Christopher DeVinny.
The allegations against him are that he essentially had a stream of benefits that were given to him by an individual by the name of James Davis, who owned a business that did business with the sheriff's office.
Those benefits to Green allegedly included payments he used to buy his retirement home in Florida and close to $250,000 for his 2007 reelection campaign. Green's attorney, Peter Scuderi, says his client denies the allegations, and he adds there are more than 1 million documents that were seized that he has to review.
I haven't evaluated the indictment yet, so I can't tell you particularly exactly what they're saying, but he's ready to go to trial.
Green is free on bail pending trial and will return to Florida to await his day in court, which isn't expected to happen before the spring. I'm Tom McDonald, WHYY News.
After a nearly week-long trial, a jury of 8 women and 4 men convicted Catherine Knott of misdemeanor charges, but acquitted her of felony counts in an indictment that prosecutors are calling a hate crime. As WHYY's Bobby Allen reports, the verdict brings an end to a case that started last September when a group of more than a dozen brutally attacked 2 gay men in Center City, Philadelphia.
After the verdict, a few jurors described the contentious conversations that took place in the jury room. Juror Ari Doina says he and 9 others were ready to convict Knott on all charges. But 2 jurors weren't so sure. They thought the count of aggravated assault, a felony, was too harsh. He says they felt for the 25-year-old Knott.
That was the hard part, is they weren't basing their decisions on evidence. They were basing it on emotions and feeling bad about this poor girl.
Doina says he'd like to see Knott be put behind bars.
I think she needs a couple of years to think about her behavior, honestly.
During the trial, witnesses testified that Knott threw punches and screamed homophobic insults as she and others beat up the gay couple. Knott's co-defendants took plea deals and avoided jail time. Witnesses testified as many as 15 were in the group, leaving some wondering why were only 3 charged.
I think it says exactly what we're supposed to do in this case, which is to be cautious. All right, we're not supposed to just willy-nilly charge someone if we think or feel that something took place.
Assistant District Attorney Mike Berry says time and time again, not Phil Williams and Kevin Harrigan were identified, while they couldn't find enough evidence on other suspects. Berry says he'll push for Knott to be incarcerated, but he wouldn't elaborate on his recommendation.
I'm not looking for her to get off scot-free. There's consequences to these crimes she's been found guilty of.
For jury foreman Joan Bellinger, it was a simple case of meting out justice.
And it's just not fair to them. It's not fair to anybody. It's not fair to anyone with any sensibility whatsoever. It's not fair. It's just not fair that this kind of thing happens.
Knott's attorney Louis Pasico argued that Knott watched her friends assault the 2 men, but never joined in. Before the verdict was read, Knott was biting her lower lip. Her family members held each other closely. Then it came down.
I whispered that I was proud of her. I was proud of her because she testified and she looked 12 citizens in the eye and she told them their version that night. You know, she was stoic throughout this.
Pasico says not being convicted of a felony is a big deal because a felony conviction can irreparably damage a person's life, he says. Nellie Fitzpatrick, who heads the city's Office of LGBT Affairs, said the perpetrator's alleged prejudice is not rare. On the stand, Knott said using words like gay and dyke are not necessarily offensive in all contexts.
It's reflective of the fact that there's still a lot of people across, you know, our country who, instead of understanding who people are, instead of learning about them because they are different, their first reaction is hate.
Pasico maintains that not one fiber in Knott's being is homophobic. She will be sentenced in February. For WHYY News, I'm Bobby Allen.
This week, the Philadelphia Housing Authority opened its newest set of townhomes in the city's Germantown neighborhood. The new Queen Lane apartments are part of a 20-year history of the agency replacing high-rise buildings with smaller, lower-rise developments. But as WHYY's Aaron Moselle reports, PHA's president says that trend has to stop.
On a September morning in 2014, explosives reduced the old Queen Lane apartments to rubble. Oh, yeah. 16 stories and nearly 60 years of Germantown history gone in seconds. Roughly a year later, elected officials and residents joined Philadelphia Housing Authority brass this week to celebrate the opening of the new Queen Lane Apartments, a sparkling townhome development. Longtime resident Corliss Gray hopes the new construction will be a catalyst for the neighborhood.
This is such an improvement in the neighborhood. I think it'll bring people in who do better for the neighborhood.
But the new development left Philadelphia with fewer affordable apartments. 119 units went down, just 55 went up. Over the past two decades, while demolishing 24 high-rise buildings across the city, PHA has lost 7,000 units.
The trend at the time was, let's deconcentrate poverty.
That's PHA President Kelvin Jeremiah.
I don't know that there was a whole lot of forethought in terms of what the consequences of that might be when you're not opting for one-for-one replacement in communities where you have huge demands.
With hindsight on his side, Jeremiah says Queen Lane will be the last time PHA implodes a high-rise and doesn't replace every unit during redevelopment.
I don't believe that is in the public interest to continue to increase the exodus of units, affordable housing units. The demand hasn't shrunk any.
Jeremiah says PHA's waiting list has had roughly 100,000 names on it for years. On average, people can stay on the list for 10 years. Karen Collins has been waiting for more than 20.
PHA is a godsend. It's under attack, but they're also one of our worst nightmares.
Collins lives in a row home in West Philly with her two kids. It's Section 8 housing, which means her rent is heavily subsidized. She pays about $200 a month for a unit that could otherwise fetch $800 or more. But unlike most PHA units, Collins has to cover utilities, a difficult task considering she's physically disabled and survives on Social Security.
My income comes in the door, it goes back out that door. You know, I'm a saving personality. 10 cents here. $10 there, that's how we make it.
The wait has also taken a heavy physical and emotional toll. There's no wheelchair ramp outside her house or any modifications inside.
I'm wearing myself out sometimes, you know, walking up and down steps with my nerve damage. One day I'll be able to walk, the next day I may not be able to walk.
Others have benefited from PHA tearing down its high-rises. Inez Green is among them. In 1984, Green moved into a high-rise unit at the South Wark Housing Development in South Philly at 4th Street and Washington Avenue. She says the apartments were fine. The rest of the building, not so much.
No lighting. You know, you had to walk up and down dark steps. It was horrible. It was really bad.
So were the streets outside the tower.
It was really violent. You know, you couldn't go out. People come around and tell you, well, we get ready to do this, like, you know, fight or shoot or whatever, take your kids in.
Green says things slowly started getting better after 2000. That's the year PHA tore down two of three towers at South Wark. It replaced them with two-story buildings with postage stamp-sized lawns out front. Green says there's still crime, but it's less rampant, and there's a better relationship with neighbors in nearby Queen Village.
It went from project to development. So when the kids say, oh, you in a project, no, you're in the development, because a project is something that's not done. This is complete. You know, we changed their mindset so they can move on and let them know that they better than what people portray them to be.
PHA still has 16 towers comprising more than 1,700 units. Nearly half of those properties are dedicated to seniors and more than likely won't be demolished. The rest, so-called family buildings, could be torn down in the coming years. Could, because there's no way to know how much federal funding will be available down the line. For now, PHA only has plans to demolish a pair of high-rises in the Sharswood section of North Philadelphia. PHA President Kelvin Jeremiah says his agency alone can't solve what he calls a housing crisis, but he's willing to try. To him, everything starts at home.
We know that you cannot get a job if you're transient. We know that you cannot be in a stable school if you don't have stable housing, right? So first, let's deal with the housing situation. Let's stabilize our families, because at that point, we were able to provide them the services that they need.
But replacing each and every unit when imploding a tower means PHA will need to find more land. Jeremiah says it does make sense to move away from high-rise developments, but the low-rise replacements need more space to ensure these plans don't make PHA's epic waiting lists even longer. I'm Aaron Mozell, WHYY News.
Turning to this evening's headlines, Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf's office says it has the support necessary to pass major tax legislation in the state house. It's a crucial step toward ending a budget stalemate now in its sixth month. House Majority Leader Dave Reed is scheduling a vote for tomorrow. Delaware officially decriminalized possession by adults of small amounts of marijuana. A decriminalization law signed in June by Governor Jack Markell took effect today, making possession by an adult of a personal use quantity of marijuana, defined as up to 1 ounce, a civil offense punishable by a fine of $100. President Barack Obama is commuting the sentences of six nonviolent drug offenders in Pennsylvania. They are among 95 offenders whose sentence commutations were announced by the president today. Many were convicted of distributing or possessing cocaine or crack cocaine. The commutations are the most that Obama has issued at one time. Partly cloudy, 41 degrees, it's 6:18. You're listening to Newsworks tonight on WHYY. The evening forecast, partly cloudy, breezy, low 33 degrees. Sunny tomorrow, high only 43, and wind gust of 35 miles an hour will make it feel much colder still. Down to 28 degrees overnight Saturday night, and then Sunday, sunny, high 46. Clouding up Monday, a bit warmer, high 56 degrees. Still ahead, a musical about the Mummers and the Philadelphia accent. Think My Fair Lady.
When I went to college, I had a slight Philadelphia accent. And when I came back for Thanksgiving, and I said, can you pass the mustard? Everybody was like, oh, he's from England now.
Newsworks tonight continues on WHYY.
Let's be honest, fruitcake, well, it has a bit of a branding problem, right?
Instead of calling them fruitcakes, we started calling them pecan cakes. And that changed pretty dramatically the sales for our cakes.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, the economics of a much maligned holiday treat. Next time on Marketplace from APM.
Marketplace follows Newsworks tonight at 6:30 this evening on WHYY.
Cabrini College is proud to support WHYY, now offering part-time doctoral degrees in organizational development and educational leadership. Cabrini can help you earn a PhD or EdD in 3 years without giving up your life. Their faculty and small classes help to expand your knowledge and professional network while giving you the tools to advance your career. More information on Cabrini's professional doctoral programs is available at cabrini.edu/doc.
Welcome back to Newsworks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. Donald Trump solidifies his front-runner status following Tuesday's Republican presidential candidate debate. Let's look at his seemingly controversy-proof appeal with Frank Newport, editor-in-chief of the Gallup poll. Hi, Frank.
Hello, Dave.
Frank, Mr. Trump stands by his call to temporarily prevent Muslims from entering the United States. How does Gallup go about assessing how that stand resonates with potential voters?
Well, it's a very interesting question. We did not go out and say, do you favor or oppose that? Instead, we said what's really important here is the public's views on what would be effective in helping control or combat terrorism going forward. So we took Trump's recommendation vis-a-vis Muslims and embedded it in a list of actually 10 different things that could be done to prevent terrorism, most of which were actually mentioned by President Obama in his December 6th speech. And for each one, we said, how effective do you think this would be? And the bottom line is that Trump's suggestion about Muslims, which we actually worded two different ways in the list, was dead last. In other words, Americans are least likely to think that that would be effective in controlling terrorist acts than any of the other actions that could be taken that we tested.
In spite of that, though, his appeal seems to be enduring. Is that because his image is pretty set at this point?
His image is absolutely set, at least as far as we can see. We keep expecting to see major changes in the percent of Republicans or percent of adults in general who have a favorable or unfavorable opinion of Trump. In particular, Dave, I've been looking now at data collected since December 8th, which would be the day after he made his announcement about Muslims, through the end of this week. And we find that, if anything, among national adults, Trump's image has edged up a little. His favorables are up a couple of points, and his unfavorables are down a couple of points. So we can reject the hypothesis that what Trump said on December 7th about Muslims and preventing them from coming into this country has caused Americans to turn more sour on him. In fact, that's not the case based on our data.
Let me run this by you. I've heard it posited that perhaps pollsters underreport Trump's appeal, meaning that respondents might be reluctant to say they're in favor of somebody who's come up with so many controversial stands. Is there any merit to that?
Well, you know, that's very hard to say. There's a lot of discussion in polling circles going back for decades about the fact that people may be a little less than honest or not saying what they actually feel when we ask them certain questions. But I don't think that's the case. I think in today's environment, when we call people up anonymously on their cell phone or on their landline and simply say, do you have a favorable or unfavorable opinion to the following people, including Donald Trump, I don't see any reason why somebody who likes Trump wouldn't say favorable.
Fear of terrorism still at the top of the list for problems for Americans?
It is. Our December update showed a major shift where that was number one. And actually, in addition to that itself, fear of terrorism, we had an increased number of mentions of things like national security and the Islamic State in general.
In turn, has Gallup polled the public on the most effective ways to combat terrorism?
Indeed. And in that long list that we gave Americans, here's the two that win. Americans are most likely to say that increasing airstrikes against the Islamic State and overhauling the federal visa waiver program to provide tighter screening for people who come to the U.S. temporarily, those two things would be the most effective. Right below that, banning gun sales to people on the federal no-fly watch list, something that President Obama has proposed, but there's been a pushback on that, and also sending more U.S. special ops troops to fight the Islamic State. Those are number three and four on the list. So all in all, if we put it together, we would say Americans say tighten up the visa program, tighten up who can buy guns, do more military things in the Middle East, short of sending ground troops. But the idea of somehow profiling Muslims, they say, that's at the bottom of the list. We don't think that would be effective at all.
Thanks, Frank.
You bet, Dave.
Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup Poll. He joins us each week at this time on Newsworks Tonight. A new musical about the Mummers premieres this weekend. The Three Maries is set in a South Philly Mummer clubhouse in the 1920s. From WHYY's Arts and Culture Desk, Peter Crimmins reports that the writer was surprised that no one had ever done it before.
Michael Ogborn is a longtime theater composer, having written plays and musicals that have won 10 Barrymore Awards. He's now based in New York, but he grew up in the Roxborough neighborhood of Philadelphia.
In the neighborhood, the ladies used to say, she sits around the house all day like she's Maria Romania. Who does she think she is, the Queen of Romania? And I kept thinking as a kid, why do these women know about the Queen of Romania? Why not the Queen of England or the King of England or somebody? And then I realized when I was looking through a book of old photographs of Philadelphia, and it said Queen Maria of Romania's visit to Philadelphia 1926, Bellevue Stratford Hotel.
So we gotta do what?
Have a fancy ball.
Queen Marie of Romania visited Philadelphia in 1926. She was on a cross-country tour. She's one of the Three Maries. The other two are a mother and daughter preparing for the royal visit against the music and pageantry of an upcoming Mummers parade.
I don't know why anyone else hasn't thought of this before.
Don't let him get you down, Marie. Don't let him get you down.
The story is about the young Marie who decides, against the wishes of her mother, Marie, to get a job instead of pursuing marriage. But she learns that her professional career is hampered by her Philadelphia accent.
Hello, Mr. Waterhouse.
Hello, Mr. Waterhouse.
Hello, Mr. Waterhouse.
Hello, Mr. Waterhouse.
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 Water.
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 Waterhouse.
The show premieres at the Prince Theater on Chestnut Street for 4 weeks. Producer Monica Rosenthal would like to see it continue on as a local institution.
Like Sheer Madness in Boston or Beach Blanket Babylon in San Francisco, Tony and Tina's Wedding, shows that run forever in one place.
Ogborn, for his part, believes the Philadelphia-centric show could have legs in other cities because of the story's universal message about the pull of family ties couched in local color.
When I went to college, I had a slight Philadelphia accent. And when I came back for Thanksgiving, and I said, can you pass the mustard? Everybody was like, oh, he's from England now. All kind of like started making fun of me. And I'm like, no, that's what they taught us in theater school. And they're like, oh, theater school.
I need to book the ballroom at the Bellevue.
Ogborn says his original music for the Three Maries was inspired by Mummer's tunes. The live onstage band includes banjos, saxophones, and glockenspiels. I'm Peter Crimmins, WHYY News.
Pardon my expression, button on the wrist, and I'm gonna need the popo out on Broad Street.
And finally this evening, what's in a name? Holiday gifts in the case of one Pennsylvania town. The company Retail Me Not is in the business of giving away coupons. So when they found a town called Coupon, they sensed a marketing opportunity and ended up finding much more. The company intended to give each resident of Coupon, Pennsylvania, near Altoona, a gift for the holidays. Instead, couponers said what they really wanted was to give something to someone else. And as a result, Retail Me Not gave residents gifts that others in town said they needed. After the town showed the company the true meaning of Christmas, Retail Me Not threw them a holiday party, the first large gathering the 75 residents have had since 2009 when the town's church burned down. With that, there's little left to say except that's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yaakov and Kimberly Haas. Our news director is Eugene Song. At the helm this week, Al Banks and Diana Martinez. John Mussoni is acting vice president of news and civic dialogue. Thanks for joining us and have a great weekend. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.
Wood Services proudly supports WHYY. Since 1913, Wood Services has helped change the lives of children and adults with special needs, like Maddie. Arriving at the age of 15, Maddie had access to the meaningful care and life-altering supports that Woods provides to individuals on the autism spectrum who deal with frequent angry outbursts. 2 years later, Maddie is bringing joy to her family and those around her. Woods helps people with special needs achieve success. Learn more at woods.org. Wood Services. Exceptional people. Fulfilling lives.
On the next Fresh Air, the director and star of the film Son of Saul. Set in the death camp Auschwitz in 1944, it's about the Sonderkommandos, the Jews who were forced by the Nazis to herd Jews into the gas chambers and load the bodies into ovens. Son of Saul won the grand prize at this year's Cannes Film Festival and opens in theaters this week. Join us.
Tonight at 7 on WHYY-FM.
Frederick Living supports WHYY. Frederick Living, a continuing care retirement community nestled in the beautiful countryside of Montgomery County, is proud to announce the expansion of their campus. The meadows at Frederick Living will consist of 55 cottages clustered in an innovative design based on the pocket neighborhood concept. Frederick Living is now taking reservations. Visits can be scheduled by calling 610-754-7878. That's 610-754-7878. Frederick Living. Live well.